The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
All right, welcome to a new episode of Sixers Daily. I'm your host, Jazz Kang. Before I jump into things, don't forget, subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. You can catch us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, you name it, we are there. And of course, check us out online at libertyballers.com. Joining me today, a man who has an NBA insider for Bleacher Report, also his book, Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. You can catch that anywhere you get your reading fix. Mr. Jake Fisher. Jake, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for the introduction. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Big news, obviously, and you wrote about this a couple of days ago, circling around the NBA. And sorry, Philly fans and Sixer fans, we are going to have to talk about Ben Simmons until we get a resolution to this issue. But looking at it with what's gone on with James Harden, you wrote a couple of days ago on Bleacher Report that Harden might be looking to relocate in the offseason. Doesn't look like any deals are going to get made at the trade deadline. The Nets pretty much came out and told Woj on Wednesday that, hey, this is not going to happen. But when you're talking to the people you know around the league, and Kendrick Perkins also said there is some, you know, smoke to the fire that Harden might want out and go into Philly. When you're looking at this, how realistic of a proposition is this, do you think, for the Sixers to try and maybe look at getting Harden in for Ben in the offseason?
Yeah, it's something that's hung over the whole dynamic ever since Ben Simmons. I mean, even before Ben Simmons requested a trade, I think my understanding from the conversations I've had with pretty much everyone involved in this dynamic, aside from Ben Simmons himself, because very few people have spoken to Ben Simmons throughout, you know, all of this in the NBA world. I'll say, like, the Sixers' original efforts to trade Ben to go and get James Harden from Brooklyn a year ago, before James got to Brooklyn, that was the first fissure, crack, whatever you want to call it, in this relationship between Ben and the Sixers franchise, where, I mean, I think it's pretty well documented at this point that he was, you know, shopping around for houses in Houston and all that stuff. And then, you know, you go into the Atlanta Hawks series, game 7 loss, Doc Rivers post game comments, blah, blah, blah. James has always been someone that the Sixers were, I mean, they valued Ben Simmons highly. And I mean, they value Joel Embiid more. And I think, as I've written about in the past, and I've definitely spoken about a lot as well, I mean, Daryl Morey's clear effort to make this Joel Embiid's team and to build a team around Joel Embiid has clearly, you know, all along put Ben Simmons on that chopping block of potential piece to go and get a James Harden or a Damian Lillard or a Bradley Beal. The reason this stuff is coming up now is because, yeah, as the trade deadline approaches, with this Kyrie Irving part-time player status in Brooklyn, Kevin Durant's injury has kind of exacerbated the situation where, and games, Harden's playing by himself with, you know, a lot of old guys on minimum deals like Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge, and Paul Millsap's not even playing for them right now, to a mix of young guys and second-round picks like Kessler Edwards, where he's definitely starting to look where the grass may be greener, and Philly is the obvious, you know, clear landing spot that would work. I mean, there's other teams, I'm sure, if James Harden signaled, I'm definitely going to reach for agency, you know, I'm sure a lot of teams would start to try to move some things around and see if he'd have interest in going there. But that's kind of the context here, if I checked all the boxes to your question.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's so many underlying things that have to play out in order for this to occur. Like, you're looking at Brooklyn if KD's back fully healthy, which we expect, you know, coming in about a month or so, depending on what happens with the vaccination status of Kyrie Irving, maybe the, you know, New York changes its policies that you don't have to be vaccinated as hopefully the pandemic winds down here, getting into the spring and into the summer. But when you're looking at the factors, like I'm mentioning, let's say Brooklyn goes into the playoffs, all three are healthy, somehow loses in round two, maybe again in round three. Would that put more pressure on James Harden to want to leave? Like, what do you think his dissatisfaction is right now at this point? Just the kind of chaos that's been around the Nets in terms of the Kyrie situation, Steve Nash. Some people are complaining about the way he's running his rotations. Like, what do you think the reasons are that James Harden might want, not to say he's going to for sure, but might want to leave Brooklyn come time for the offseason?
Yeah. Well, to be clear, like, there's no pressure on James Harden, right? Like, he's doing what he wants to do. If anything, I mean, the way it's been described to me by people who know him, he wants to win championships, plural. Like, he, as much as he gets crap for being, you know, the strip club guy and shows up out of shape and all that type of stuff, like, he is a winner. I think that's why he's frustrated right now overall. That's what he said. I mean, what he said post game Tuesday night after my report came out was that he's frustrated by the losses. You know, on record, obviously, for those paying close attention, he lightly pushed back that on the fact that he likes living in Brooklyn. But you know, I've talked to several people who are in his orbit, let's say, who have commented on the Kyrie status, those rotations with Nash. I mean, he likes to have dating back to his Houston days, Harden liked to have, you know, a strong crunch time unit that he knew kind of, these are the four dudes I'm going to battle with when the game's on the line. And Steve Nash, I mean, injuries have played a big factor. COVID's played a big factor, but Nash has proven a penchant to like to experiment with different lineups and stuff like that. He's rewarded guys with hot hands, young players who have stepped up and contributed that night with that kind of closing lineup opportunity. So again, that's very circumstantial, right? Being that if Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving were both healthy and the vaccination status wasn't hanging over it, they'd probably all be on the court for these crunch time lineups. And I doubt they'd really care too much about who those fourth and fifth guys are, right?
So could have been me and you with those three on the court, and we'd have a chance at winning, don't you think, Jake? So
exactly. So, and I got a little bit of a shot. I don't know about you guys. So I think overall, like, the other stuff about Brooklyn, I don't want to speak too much and put words in his mouth, but like going from Texas, where, you know, the Rockets would always, part of their free agency pitches to players over the years, from the Carmelos of the world to Dwight Howard, who they actually signed, was when you come to Houston without our income tax, with the low state taxes overall, and this, the way the real estate's out here, you can get these McMansions that are not that far from the city. You know, traffic there is pretty, it's easy to get around. The freeways are clear. Like, I live in Brooklyn. I love living in Brooklyn. This is the greatest city in the world, as I told you before we got on air. But I would understand why someone who's a bazillionaire who lives in that type of environment and also has a lot of, I mean, most of these guys, very few of these players at this echelon of the NBA who make, you know, 40 million plus every year, few of them don't have a lot of people on their payroll, from managers to day-to-day people to chefs who live in their houses to, you know, maybe even a barber sometimes who, like, is a live-in buddy. So, you know, all this type of those teams around them, like, you got to pay for those guys too, and a lot of their housing as well. And, like, it's very different doing that in Houston compared to – and he's also, you know, an L.A. guy, like, coming from – that whole life of LA, Arizona State, OKC, Houston to, you know, New York. Obviously the climate between New York and Philly is not that too different, which, you know, people kind of are poking holes in the reporting in that regard. But on the other side of things in Philly, like, their practice facilities in Camden, right over the bridge, you can live in Cherry Hill in the same type of mansion type environment, like that type of stuff. And it's a quick drive down Route 70, I believe, if I'm getting it off the top of my head correctly. Like, I've made that drive from my parents' house in Cherry Hill to they don't live there anymore, honestly, but to that practice facility. I mean, that's kind of all the factors that I'm willing to share right now without putting too many words in his mouth for him.
Well, I can understand the living in a mansion in Houston and not being able to get that space in New York. So, I mean, you could, you know, look at the difference between the two. But like I said before, I mean, I love New York City. I think it's a great spot. Philly's a great city, too. So that is something we have to keep our eye on. But shifting our focus back to Ben Simmons now. This has been going on, like you mentioned. We had the rumors come out last season that it was going to be Ben Simmons, Matisse Thybulle, and a couple of first-rounders for Harden. That ultimately fell through. James Harden, ultimately, from what we were hearing, chose Brooklyn. But we're looking at this now. You mentioned Game 7 in June of last year where he passed up the open dunk and just played not very good throughout the entire series. When you're looking at this from Daryl Morey's perspective, Jake, like, where are the Sixers at in terms of looking at this through the lens of Joel Embiid's playing at an unreal level right now? I mean, clearly, I think a top three candidate to win NBA MVP, been the leading scorer in the league, really, I think, since about Christmas time now, overall averaging 33 points a game. But when you're looking at Daryl Morey's stance on this, has it been that we are just going to wait for the best possible package until we can get it? Or is there any pressure on him to be like, let's try and make a move to add a piece, and if that involves trading Ben, because we have an MVP level guy who's turning 28 in less than 2 months, we should try and take advantage of this now?
The messaging from Philly side of things has been consistent all along, and it's that no matter how good Joel Embiid is, even like how good he is the precise reason why they are waiting. They do not view this as wasting a season, being that they're looking at Ben Simmons from a pure asset standpoint as being a 25-year-old multi-time all-star runner-up defensive player of the year who is under contract for 4 more years. And because of that, they are truly acting as if you doing something now for this season, just to optimize this season, that might not optimize them for those last 3 years after this season, could actually hurt building around Joel Embiid and competing with Joel Embiid compared to not making a move now to try to optimize him this season, if that makes sense. I mean, a lot of people around the league, just like I've seen fans online, have criticized that approach, which, you know, is fair. Who's to say, you know, if this isn't lightning in a bottle, or how many years Embiid has at this type of peak. But that's been Philly's standpoint all along, and they've got good reason, I think, to think that a guy like James Harden or Bradley Beal, who also is staring at a potential free agent this summer, or even Jaylen Brown in Boston, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander in Oklahoma City seems to be a little less likely to come open and down the pipeline here, but who's to say, you know, even John Collins, for example, is a name that's come up, and he's clearly a piece that the Hawks would send back to Philly in that framework that's been discussed. He was not really being considered available for trade so widely back when Ben first requested a trade. And he's not the type of piece I think they're hoping for either, but he's just an example of how they're holding out for a player that they will ultimately accept that deal for, and holding out hope that that type of guy will become available between now and, the start of next season. I mean, ownership to Embiid, to Doc Rivers, you know, everyone has seemed to have been, they're all singing the same company tune right now about wanting to wait for the best deal possible. But then again, like, yes, at a certain point after this season, I mean, they can't trade him after the deadline, right? And I doubt we're going to see something change here in the next 2 weeks on that stance. Maybe in the postseason, if they fall short in the first round, or, you know, other elements that come into play, somebody gets hurt, someone gets fired, what have you. Yeah, maybe that can change in this offseason going into next year. But for now, that's the way things have stand. They've stood that way since June, July.
When you're looking at this Simmons thing, and I'll ask you not from, you know, where you look at and the sources you've talked to, but just in your opinion, how do you think this Simmons situation plays out? And if you had to guess which team he ends up on, even if that's in the offseason, where do you think he ends up come time for June, July, if the Sixers wait till then to make a trade?
At this point, honestly, like, if I'm making Vegas odds, I truly do think that Ben Simmons is most likely to end up in Brooklyn. I really do. But I mean, we're so far away from that. Like, if the Nets win the championship, it's going to be pretty hard for James Harden to walk away from that dynamic. I mean, the Sacramento-Atlanta stuff seems to be very much in the present right now. I don't, I don't, I don't know what could happen between now and then that would change Philly's standpoint on those asking prices back. I mean, the Washington situation is one I would keep an eye on too, especially, you know, if James does not come on the board. Like, the Wizards aren't great right now, and Bradley Beal is definitely applying pressure on that front office to, I want to be clear, like, I'm not saying he's yelling at Tommy Sheffield, go get me a guy, but there's definitely influence being asserted to make this team better. And they're looking at Jeremy Grant and they're making options. Like, what if the Wizards don't, you know, march further into the playoffs than they are right now? What if they miss the playoffs altogether? Maybe Brad wants out, and that's an opportunity there as well. Like, I think those situations potentially coming up, even though they might not happen also, like, those to me still seem more logical than the Sacramento destination or Atlanta or the teams like Minnesota and Indiana that have been in the mix for him all along, because the one thing that's remained constant has been those teams haven't had a player back that Philly wants to get, and they're just waiting for one of those guys to become available. So I still think that, as much as it's a pie in the sky reality, like, if they're only going to make that trade for one of those guys, my guess to you right now is that his most likely landing spots are going to be the teams that those guys are on right now.
Yeah. And Maury, like, I remember, you know, being at training camp and at media day and, you know, their stance, like you mentioned, everybody's been like, we're going to wait till we get the best possible deal.
Jake, I want to jump into a couple more things, including Tobias Harris and some general NBA talk, with us being less than 2 weeks away from the deadline. We'll do that after a short break.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Let's shift our focus from Ben Simmons to the Sixers as a whole. Let's just say, you know, we know he's not coming back anytime soon. Likely won't rejoin the team, even if he's still on the squad after the trade deadline, Jake. But when you're looking at this, like Tobias Harris, you know, making $35 million this year, going up to 37 next year, then just over 39 in 23-24, which is the final year of his deal. And I've said this before, I like Tobias Harris as a player. Is he playing up to the value of his contract? No, but he was given that by the team and he took it. So when you're looking at any of the other guys on Philly, whether that's Matisse Thybulle, who has the potential to be an all-world defender, you know, once he gets it all together, Tyrese Maxey, a young guy coming up, really playing amazing considering where his level was at, you know, coming into the league as a young man, you know, basically learning the point guard position. But when you look at this, is there any other moves that Philly is potentially looking at making right now that would help enable them to make maybe a deeper playoff run? Because as things stand, I'm looking at this roster as a second round team. Maybe Joel can win a series on his own where he goes off for 35, 40 a night, which he has the potential to. But is there any other deals outside of Ben Simmons that the Sixers could be looking at making right now?
Yeah, I mean, Tobias Harris's name has obviously come up a lot. It's largely been linked and synced with the Ben Simmons conversations, but I'm sure if that has brought other conversations to light where they could find someone who's got less guaranteed money into the future, they would take it. And again, I'm not saying they're actively shopping Tobias, but I'm sure that's a goal of theirs. Paul Reed's name's come up a little bit. I don't know if I've written that yet. To be honest, I don't remember. But he's definitely a name. I mean, he hasn't cracked that rotation, and he's kind of maxed out as being an MVP-type G League player. So it would make sense that they'd be interested in seeing what his value would be. And I think Isaiah Joe, from conversations I've had, would be someone that the Sixers are willing to part with as well. But other than that, it's been pretty quiet. Like, I don't see them making significant moves to upgrade this current iteration of this team while they're waiting for this Ben Simmons domino to fall. It seems like that group has pretty much been kind of galvanized by Ben's absence, and they're trying to forge forward as far as they can without him. I don't think they're going to do a George Hill type acquisition that they've done in the past.
When you look at the Sixers as they are, Jake, you know, looking at obviously Embiid, Harris, Maxey, really the leading guy, Seth Curry's had a nice season too. And then you have Danny Green, Matisse Thybulle, Andre Drummond. These guys who are kind of the reserves right now, and hopefully Danny Green's back in the lineup soon and later. But when you're looking at this, where do you put the ceiling on this Sixer squad without a Ben Simmons trade? And let's say they pass the deadline without making a move. How far do you think they can get as constructed?
I mean, the way Embiid's playing right now, it's you got to take your hat off to Chicago and Cleveland really establishing themselves as top tier teams in the East. I mean, what the Cavs did last night to Milwaukee was pretty impressive. They play like veterans. I mean, I was texting someone with that front office last night. I mean, they play together. They go on runs like a real team. So all of a sudden the Cavs are like just like one of these teams. But I mean, the fact that the Sixers are right there in the mix, I mean, they're looking at it right now. They're only 2.5 games behind the first place Miami Heat. Like, that's apologies to the Charlotte Hornets, who have had a really great year. Like, that's clearly the top six teams in the East right now: Miami, Chicago, Cleveland, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Philly. And I think that order is going to be mixing and matching and flopping around depending on health and whatever trade stuff happens this next couple of weeks here. So, I mean, that's right. That's honestly right where I have expected them to be all season. I thought they'd be like a top six team, even without Ben. That's how good Joel Embiid is. When he's healthy, he's in shape. Like, it doesn't really matter how many, and you have shooters around him. Like, it doesn't really matter who was around him. He's just that damn good. So I think right there where they are, I mean, if they fall into the play-in tournament picture, I think that'd be disappointing. If I work for the Sixers organization, I'm a Sixers fan, I'd be disappointed in that. But I think they could also, I mean, who's to say they couldn't go on a run and move up to four, you know what I mean? But I doubt they're like, without Ben, I wouldn't consider them a favorite to get out of the East, though. I still think they'd probably be, they're in the bottom of that tier of those teams.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how Chicago and Cleveland perform in the playoffs, given where they're coming from last season. I'm with you. I love Darius Garland, Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, obviously, as a rookie. So I'm the Cavs. I'm keeping an eye on that squad as well. Although, like I said, age typically wins in the NBA. I want to wrap up just kind of taking a general look around the league, Jake. The Sacramento Kings, you mentioned, quite possibly the worst organization in all of sports. I've wanted them to do well because they have a great fan base. De'Aaron Fox, Tyrese Halliburton, names we've heard thrown around. Also heard that they might be untouchable. You mentioned John Collins on Atlanta. Also talking DeMontis Sabonis, Miles Turner on Indiana. Which name do you think that might be available right now is most likely to be dealt before the February 10th trade deadline?
I would think it's Jeremy Grant. The Pacers have kind of been like the Magic in years past, until the Magic finally did have their big rebuild deadline last year, where they sent out Vooch and Fournier and Aaron Gordon. The Pacers seem to be like, this is the year they're going to do it. I mean, everyone's available there. Domas, Miles Turner, Caris LeVert, Torrey Craig, Justin Holiday, Jeremy Lamb. But, you know, Turner's injuries kind of clouded that situation a bit. A lot of teams that were looking at him to help them make a playoff run. And now, you know, who's to say exactly when he'll come back? I mean, I was talking to someone familiar with his injury the other day before I wrote this story that came out this morning, Thursday, on this trade notebook. And, like, there's really – he's out at least 2 weeks. There's not much confidence it'll be 2 weeks. Like, it might be, you know, past the All-Star break, right? So, if you're trading for someone to help you make the playoffs, but he's not available for you to help you make the playoffs, that's going to obviously lower the asking price, and maybe it'll get too low, or the offer prices, I guess. And maybe it'll get too, the offers will be too low and Indiana will hold on to him through the draft. I think Jeremy Grant, you know, this is the highest his value will ever be. He's even coming off, he's even injured right now. But he's expected, I mean, he went down to the G League and he's been recalled. It seems like he's making progress. And, I mean, the Pistons are clearly rebuilding. Sure, there's a great logic to keeping him, and they get another top five pick, and you add that pick to Cade and Sadiq Bey and Isaiah Stewart and Jeremy Grant, and all of a sudden, like, maybe they're the Cavs of next year, right? Mm-hmm. But also, he's going to be very expensive very soon. He wants a four-year, $112 million maximum contract extension this summer. You know, that might be a little rich for a rebuilding team's blood to create limitations for them to build that thing from the ground up. And if you can get, you know, somewhere between what Vucevic went for last year and Gordon went for last year, you know, a pick and a good young player, another player, maybe a pick or two, you know, I could totally see the Pistons opting to use someone that they kind of just stole in free agency to go give them another young piece that matches up more closely with their young draft picks timeline.
Jake, is there any team that might be under the radar that we're not hearing about that you're looking at and hearing from your sources that might be looking to make a deal that comes out of nowhere as a surprise, you know, trade announcement comes down on February 10th? Like, damn, that came out of nowhere. Or is it just kind of the big players that we're hearing with Atlanta, Sacramento? You mentioned the Pacers, Detroit. Those are kind of the squads we're looking at to make the most moves come time for February 10th.
Yeah, I mean, I would be surprised if there was a surprising deal just because there hasn't been – I've been making calls every week and there hasn't been too much new that's been popping up. But New Orleans, I just think, has a lot more firepower and they have a lot more options on the table than's being talked about compared to those other teams, right? Like, not saying they have more on the table, but like they have just as much, but they haven't been brought up because they don't have the piece, right? Like, they're a buyer versus like Indy, Portland, Atlanta, Sacramento. They're all potentially buyers and sellers. They could do multiple moves like that. The Pelicans are interested just in sheer buy mode. And because they're kind of poking their nose around in a lot of different options, they haven't really come up as being like a strong landing spot for many people outside. I mean, I've heard CJ McCollum pretty loudly there, but like they poked around on both Sabonis and Turner in the past. So I could totally see them. They even placed a call to Ben Simmons at some or on Ben Simmons at some point. Not recently. Please don't think that means they're a Ben Simmons opportunity. But yeah, I think the Pelicans, I mean, they have a big move to make, and I think they will make it.
Last one for you, Jake, before we wrap up here. Ben Simmons, you mentioned again there. What is his value around the league? Do people look at him as, okay, this guy's a three-time All-Star, first-team defense type talent that we're willing to pay a premium? Or do teams view him as, you know, we saw what happened in that seven-game series against the Hawks. We've seen his limitations in terms of being able to hit the outside shot, even take the outside shot consistently, let's be honest. But when you look at his value to the other GMs, would they be willing to pay a premium to get him? Or do they look at him as a guy who's lower than kind of maybe the top 25, 30 guys that we've heard Daryl Morey and the Sixers have on their list?
Yeah, I've talked to executives from a handful of teams that have had consistent interest in Ben from the jump, right? From Minnesota to Indiana to Atlanta to Sacramento. Cleveland, everyone who I've talked to, like, they want Ben, like those teams, they want Ben Simmons because they value him for what his ceiling is. I haven't heard a single person really talk about worrying if he'll ever be able to get back to the levels that he was at before whatever happened during his last couple, you know, during his last stretch as an active member of the Sixers. Sure, they're using that to their advantage right now in these trade conversations. Well, it hasn't really advanced them, obviously. They're definitely treating him like Kawhi Leonard in San Antonio when the Raptors acquired him. They're treating him like a distressed trade asset. But the difference is that Kawhi only had 1 year left on his deal. There were obvious loud rumblings of him heading to LA that offseason in free agency, which happened. This is a very different situation. So for now, executives are kind of looking and hope, just like the Sixers and Daryl Morey are hoping that James Harden will become available, or Bradley Beal will become available, or Lillard or Brown, whatever. Teams are also saying, well, we're just hoping that Philly and maybe ownership will eventually get restless and they'll force Daryl to make a deal. You know, that's kind of where everything stands. These teams want him. They value him. They've offered young players and picks. I mean, the Hawks aren't putting up John Collins and Bogdan Bogdanovic until Danilo Gallinari because they think Ben Simmons sucks, right? Like, they want to bring him onto their team. So it's murky and kind of confusing to say, like, how exactly they value him. Because I think they value him higher than the offers they're making right now. It's just a competitive business, and negotiations are a sport themselves.
All right. I appreciate your insight, Jake. I know you are a busy, busy man. So thank you for taking the time out to join us here. Love reading your work on Bleacher Report as well.
Thank you very much, man. I appreciate you having me.
All right. That's Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report. You can also catch his book, Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. And follow him on Twitter as well at Jake L. Fisher. That's FICHER. Before we wrap up, don't forget, subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast Network. You can catch us wherever you get your fix. And of course, Paul Hudrick, Jackson Frank, Harrison Grimm. I can go down the line. We have a ton of talented writers at Liberty Ballers. I'll have you covered there as well.